This is On a Mission, episode 31. A trigger warning. Erin talks about her sister's death by suicide in this episode. Please take care of yourself. Maybe skip this episode if the subject will trigger you today. This is a space where I get real and go deep with my guests. They are all folks who are living out their callings, paying close attention to their lives, and each doing so with special flair. I'm your host, Maulene Dupree Dominguez. I'm a minister, teacher, writer, and general people enthusiast, and I can't wait to share some of these thought-provoking people with you, folks who are ready to get real and go deep. Erin Duffy Burke is many things. She works as an independent minister, spiritual director, yoga therapist, birth doula, the list goes on. We talk about Mary and Jesus, birth and death, trees and books. We talk about her call to the priesthood and why she uses the word priestess to describe it. Stay tuned for a contemplative conversation about what Erin has learned so far about life and spirituality. You'll love the way her genuine spiritual practice grows directly out of her life experience. Enjoy my conversation with Erin. Erin Duffy Burke, welcome to On a Mission.
Thank you, Molly. Thanks so much for having me. Really appreciate being able to be here.
It's awesome to have you.
Thanks.
So let's start with giving you an opportunity to talk about how you perceive of your ministry right now. How would you tell people that you perceive of your ministry?
Yeah, thank you. Well, you know, I've known for a long time that my primary call is as minister. And I would say the way that I minister has evolved a lot through the years. You know, at first it was such a surprise to even be called to ministry, and that faithfulness, you know, and then through the years, it's just really morphed a lot. And yeah, I worked for the Roman Catholic Church for 12 years as a teacher and then as a campus minister. And just continuously felt drawn into that work. And, you know, now I really consider myself here to be of service to the people of God. I just recognize that the people of God, you know, in large part have left the pews and are found kind of all over and in all different spaces and places. And so I'm an independent minister. I have my own ministry business, where I really put my spiritual work into the world kind of independently of any institution, which feels pretty edgy at times. But I've met a lot of really amazing women doing this work kind of from all different backgrounds and different spiritualities. And that's been really encouraging and that's been really helpful. So I kind of do a lot of different things. I'm a spiritual director and a yoga therapist. A lot of my work combines embodiment and spiritual guidance, spiritual companioning. I call those sessions embodied soul sessions, because it's really about the weaving of body and soul. That's really powerful work. I do that in like single sessions, but also in series. I've started working more with women, mostly women. I do work with men, but it just happens that a lot of women feel called to work with me and I with them. So it's series of sessions where we kind of work on whatever's up for them. I'm also a birth doula. So I accompany women who are giving birth, and a lot of my work too has started to kind of combine, you know, the spirituality and the spiritual preparation for birth, which is really amazing. A huge, you know, central part of my work right now is I'm the co-foundress with three other women of an organization in St. Louis called Sophia Rising, which is an emerging nonprofit around like the reclamation and the restoration of the divine feminine, particularly in Christianity, in Christian spirituality and lineage and practice. So that's a lot of my kind of ministry work that I'm called to right now. I've always really felt called to writing and to theology. I am a theologian, and I say I'm a theologian because for me, it's really about the exploration of the feminine, of Sophia, of the Holy She, the sacred She, in, you know, in us and among us and around us and through us. And so I'm always writing and just finding different ways to express, her movements. And then I officiate weddings. I have recently been asked to preside at baptisms. I'm doing kind of this presiding and sacramental and spiritual leadership work in a lot of different ways. Yeah, it's pretty, like I said, it's pretty emergent and really fun at times and really scary at times because, you know, it's a real create, it feels like a real creation of something new. And I feel super called into it and it feels exactly where I need to be. And it's kind of always, yeah, developing and growing and becoming kind of the next thing it wants to be, that God really wants it to be.
Yeah. You're doing a lot of things.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm intrigued because you said it was a surprise that you were called into ministry. Was it a surprise?
You mean in the very beginning? Yeah. 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 I mean, it was, especially in Catholic ministry, because, you know, for me, yeah, my whole life I've been interested in spirit. I've been interested in spirituality and I have felt really drawn to kind of all things God, you know, and kind of all along people would turn to me for conversation and for guidance, you know, in spirituality, I always found myself there, but I've also always really been interested in lots of other, spiritualities and paths. And, you know, I'm a yoga practitioner, yoga therapist, and that kind of way of knowing the body and the self has always really drawn me. I'm a shamanic practitioner now. I'm really into nature-based spiritualities. I have been for a really long time. You know, I took a class in like indigenous ways in college and just felt super drawn into particularly Native American way of life. But I think it was a surprise to be called into Catholic ministry. And I just kept having to listen to that. And, you know, I'm deeply Catholic and it is how I express my faith and my spirituality. And I guess I never thought, yeah, for a long time, I, you know, this is part of like the priesthood conversation, I guess, but I didn't imagine myself as a kind of a leader in that, you know, or as a minister in that way until I just kept being asked to be it, to show up in that way and to be of service in that way. So it took some years. It took probably like 4 years of actually working in campus ministry and then going back to graduate school to study theology and ministry before I was like, okay, God, this is what you've made me for, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you call yourself a priestess now. Yeah. Can you tell us more about how that label fits you?
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. Well, I guess, you know, part of my evolving call into ministry also really has involved recognizing my call to priesthood, to priestly ministry, you know, and that has also really evolved. I never really considered it as a girl, even though, like, you know, a lot of people would ask me if I was interested in being a nun and I would say, no, I'd kind of say no, but if I could be a priest, you know, I'd want to do that. But even saying that, I just never really imagined it. You know, no one asked me, like, have you ever thought about being a priest? I only saw men in that space. I just wasn't given the resources to cultivate that part of my imagination. But then, you know, there were just these little moments along the way where I started kind of being able to imagine that and cultivate a sense of that in myself and start listening to that call. And it was very gradual. It was just kind of bit by bit, you know, like I remember being a senior in college and my friends and I were putting on like the passion play for, I think it was, you know, Palm Sunday. And it was just a dramatization, like an embodied reenactment of the passion. And they all like looked at me and said, Erin, you have to play Jesus, you know? And I was like, no, like what? No, like I'm a woman. Like, you know, even to myself, I was like, no, I can't do that. And they were like, yeah, you have to do it. You're going to do it, you know? And I did. And it was a really amazing experience. And then, you know, kind of presiding and being in that role, presiding at table and then even like enacting the crucifixion. And then, yeah, it like really hit something in me. And then afterwards, you know, I remember my priest coming up to me and saying, like, you know, he was like, don't get any ideas, Duffy, you know, and he was kind of joking because, like, he and I would always have this conversation about women's ordination I was just really critiquing the theology even then. And he, you know, was like, don't get any ideas. And I told him, like, you know, I already have all the ideas around that. And so there were like little glimpses like that. Or like, I remember, as a young adult, I was teaching and doing ministry in Dallas, Texas. And I remember going to mass at a church I didn't normally go to as a minister. You know, I was kind of always looking for places maybe I wouldn't be known, just to be able to go to mass and celebrate, you know, really pray and be, you know, there without having to also be working. And I remember being at this church I didn't normally go to, and it was like a vocations person came to speak, and the whole talk, he didn't use gendered pronouns, like, at all. And just something really moved in me. And I remember, like, going up to him after mass and saying, you know, what if a woman could respond yes to, like, everything you just said, you know? And he just looked at me, and I like can still see his eyes, because he just held so much love, you know. He looked at me with so much love, and he said, and sadness, there was this like amount of sadness there too. And he said, you know, I would tell her to keep praying, to like really pray, you know? And I did, but part of me was also just kind of pissed too, you know, that like I was this dawning realization of like what I perhaps was called to. And I kind of just put it out of my mind really until I ended up at the Graduate Theological Union in Berkeley to study theology and ministry. And yeah, I remember just being like by myself in a little prayer room. And I was reading about this sacerdotal priesthood, like the ordained priesthood. And it said, you know, if you have a call to heal, if you have a call to teach, if you have a call to sanctify, to preside, to be of service to the people of God in these particular ways, and also if you have the charism of leadership, you know, you very well could be called to be a priest. And I just started like sobbing, you know, and I wrote in the margin, like, unless you are a woman. I share the priest part, and then, you know, and then so that's when I really knew, I guess, I was called to priestly work and to priestly ministry, but also still within this Roman Catholic system that repeatedly said that I couldn't show up in that way. It started to become clear that I was called to this particular way of being of service to the people of God as priest. But I also was really struggling with like, but I'm Catholic, you know, I'm so Catholic. And I was going to school along with Episcopal women and Lutheran women and women who would be ordained. And I knew I was called to be Catholic. So I decided at that point to get a PhD, to kind of go the route of theologian. And that was right. So I lost my youngest sister, to suicide almost, 9 years ago. So that was that at the end of kind of all this discernment about what does it mean to be a priest, and what does it mean to be a woman with this call, you know, kind of the most life altering thing happened for me. And everything really changed. I decided I couldn't go be in academics at that time. I really needed to like be in what I knew. I needed to be doing ministry. I felt really called back into ministry. And then I ended up doing campus ministry for another 4 years, and that really gave me this like embodied experience of, oh, I am a priest, because I was working at a Newman Center here in St. Louis, where there was not a full-time priest. So I was like functioning as the pastor of the community.
Yeah.
Hearing confessions. I was really walking with students every day, all day. And then someone else would come in on Sundays, you know, to say mass. And I was having this like experience of, wait a minute, like I am doing this work, and almost like a glitchiness, right? That someone who wasn't really able to lift up that, as you know, that what they were really going through and bring it to that Eucharistic celebration as Summit, Source and Summit of Faith. So I ended up just really through another period of like grief and discernment and pain, deciding to leave that. And then so there was just a lot of deep prayer happening. I kept feeling God telling me that she wanted all of me, like my wholeness, you know, and to not leave any of it behind.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started meeting other women in St. Louis with similar call, similar story, women who were Christian, most of whom grew up Catholic, who were really called to sacramental and spiritual leadership, but also really wanted to honor their deep femininity. And one of those women kept using these two words, Christian priestess. And I had this experience of like attraction, but also like resistance and almost like a little bit of revulsion, just like why that word, why priestess? And so I had a lot of conversations with her about that. And gradually it just started to be the thing that made the most sense for me to describe what I'm called to, you know, and that's because I am a priest. I am called to priestly service. And I have to do so as a fully embodied woman. So in all of the things that make me a woman, with a deep devotion to God in her feminine form, you know, that's a big piece to me of priestessing. It's that I am a priestess of Sophia, who I consider to be the feminine heart of Christ, the feminine, you know, face of the divine. So it's as a woman and sort of in devotion to the feminine divine with other women. You know, one of the things that's been super informative for me, even understanding that call and embracing that word, has been like seeing what happens when women gather. And as soon as I started meeting these women in St. Louis, we just started praying together. We started gathering together. We started noticing like what does it mean to be priestess? And it is sacramental and spiritual leadership, you know, and it's circle leadership. So it's non-hierarchical.
Mm-hmm.
It's deeply listening to each other, deeply honoring each other. It's a lot of deep earth connection. So this sense of being really connected to the body of the earth as women and as circle of women. It involves a lot of song, a lot of dance, a lot of embodiment, a lot of really lifting each other up and supporting each other kind of in our respective work and mission and ministry. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's really how I identify now as priestess, because it feels like it really honors my call and my femininity and my womanhood. If that makes sense.
It does. Thanks. Yeah, super good. So you do a lot of work at the intersection of spirituality, embodied human work, and honoring creation, the earth.
Yeah.
What has being involved with embodiment, yoga, earth-based spirituality, how has that influenced your personal understanding of the divine?
Yeah, well, it's interesting because it's honestly the things that keep bringing me back to Christianity. Even when I think like, oh, okay, or I've had so many people tell me like, you're not really Christian or Catholic, you know, because I'm so many other things. But it's everything about it is about the incarnation, you know, and it's about incarnational. It's about like a total honoring of what it means to be human. And it's about being fully human and fully awake to our humanity, which does involve the body and it involves the heart as well as the mind, you know? And I think something I've just seen is that, you know, one of the things the patriarchy and patriarchal religion has really done is, I mean, it's created hierarchies like in the system and in the world, but it's created hierarchies within every person, right? Where we kind of do this thing where we you know, literally like we say mind over matter.
Yes.
And the matter and the mater, the mother, is like our body and our bones and our blood, you know? It's the stuff of our lives, you know? And I think Jesus was all about that. He was like all about the stuff of our lives. And he was all about people and people's lives and what was really going on, you know, and he was like, to me, in deep devotion to us, you know, and or to the people he was encountering, and to the empowerment of people like right in their lives. And that's what I've always been about. I mean, in my ministry, kind of looking at him and wanting to live that way, you know, and so, but the truth is, right, it's like when you meet people and when you encounter the suffering of people, like I grieve and I mourn, and there's so much about the world that is so unjust. And so, yeah, it's like, how do we process all that? How do we allow that to be transformed into the way that we love and the work that we're here to do? Right. And it's like, we need spirituality that like really helps us do that in very real ways. You know, and for me, like sweating it out in a dance, or like getting to Shavasana at the end of a yoga class, you know, I found myself in a transformed place. And I would think like, oh, like this is what they're talking about. Like, this is what prayer could be. Like, this is what spirituality could be. Like, this is what the Eucharist is for. Like, it's for transformation. It's for us to bring all the stuff of our lives to the table and trust that like, that is what is being transformed. That is what makes us into the body of Christ. That is the thing that like supercharges our love. And we, you know, I'm just not interested in like pretending otherwise, or like not bringing all, I mean, through the, what I just shared, it's like God wants all of me. And I believe, you know, she really wants all of us. And yeah, so embodiment practices, you know, and earth practices for me, like really bring me back to the root of me, to the roots of things, to like who God really is in a tangible way. And has just so resourced me and my work, you know, and I know that grief has been a huge teacher in this, because like when my sister died, like when other huge griefs have happened, like, you know, not being able to give my gifts to the church that I love, like it is a process that brings me to my knees and brings me straight to the ground, into my body, into like what is most real. You know, because in grief, it's like you don't have energy for anything else. So you kind of get into the messy, you get into the real. And to me, like, I mean, we, you know, our faith is centered in the Paschal Mystery. Like we live in the cyclical nature of life, death, waiting, and resurrection. And that's like, there's no greater teacher of that for me than the earth herself, like then the seasons, then the cycles. You know, women hold this in our bodies every single month. I mean, we bleed, our wombs like literally empty and renew. Women who give birth face tremendous pain and the possibility of death to bring life into the world, you know. Yeah, there's just there's so much in the nature of things in, the cycles and the rhythms of life for me that like really just keep bringing me home, right, to who God really is and to what this is all about and what we're here for and how we can be actually resourced for the work that's in front of us.
Yeah. But it sounds like being attentive to the cycles that are present in nature, in our bodies, in our daily realities of coping with grief and living as human beings, attending to those cycles has brought you right back into the heart of Christianity, where you find that life, death, waiting, resurrection cycle right there.
Yeah, totally. I mean, totally. It's why, you know, I've always loved the Triduum time. I just love those days, you know, and it's because they just reweave us constantly into what we're already woven into, you know, which is these cycles, these seasons, that everything, right, that we think we know, or we think we cannot hang on to, is dying or will die. And yet there is so much love and so much life coming to be, like at the same time, all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I mean, I learned that the really hard way through my sister, you know, but I consider it just such a total privilege and honor. And yeah, like after Katie died, I remember thinking like, oh, the resurrection is real. It's real. It's real. Because I felt Caitlin so much in the resurrection. I mean, she, like her death and the loss of her was so poignantly painful. And I experience her energy and her love all the time in ways that are just totally uncanny or totally, I would have never imagined that this could happen. And I've believed in the resurrection my whole life, you know, but there's something about like experiencing it through one I was so close to and intimate with in life that like after death to experience her love so palpably, it's just been like amazing and a great gift. Yeah. And it just has taught me, you know, so much about God, about this like great like team of saints and angels and being and ancestors that we are a part of, you know, which is part of so many indigenous ancestral teachings. And it's also a really big part of Catholicism that the communion of saints is real and we can call on their help and their aid and that they actually really want to help us. Like this stuff it sounds fantastical and it's so real.
Yeah.
You know?
Thank you for sharing this about the just profound grief that you've been walking through in the last 9 years with the loss of your sister. Do you have an example that you could share with us about your experience of resurrection with her?
Yes, they're kind of long stories. I'm thinking about what would work. Yeah, I mean, I'll share the one that happened most immediately after she died, you know, and I've written about it too, so it's really out there, but so she attempted to take her life and didn't die immediately, so we midwifed her into death for 2.5 weeks, so she was not conscious, but breathing, you know, for 2.5 weeks, so my whole family, Katie's the youngest of 6 kids, and my whole family, my parents and my siblings were there the whole time, you know, really like midwifing her into death. So, and that alone was an experience of resurrection, honestly, because she was our beloved, you know, was dying after a lot of suffering, you know, from, she was bipolar. So after suffering and yet like, as she died, I mean, she became like radiant. I mean, it's hard to explain, you know, but I remember like, yeah, just looking at her and there was like so much beauty and so much light. And yeah, it was astounding. I remember she died in February and there was, it was a blizzard outside. And so we were like in hospice with her and like literally the entire world outside was sparkling and still, you know, which felt like exactly what was happening in our holding of her. And then, you know, after she died, it was just a real obliteration. I mean, I'm her big sister and there was just a lot for me to process and a lot of like, I kept feeling her presence, but there was also this part of me that was like, no, like you died, like this isn't supposed to be, you know? And so about a month after she died, I decided to go camping. I was living out in California. I needed to be by myself. Really, I like wanted to scream and grieve and lament and cry. But I lived in the city, you know, so I was like, if I'm really going to do this, I need to be out in the wilderness. So I went camping out at Mount Tamalpais, which you probably know, Molly. Yeah. And I just kind of set up a little mini altar for her. And I just kind of whispered a prayer, you know, like, if you're here or like, I don't know what this is. I don't know what's happening, but help me to understand, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then I just, I was committed to being there for 3 days. And so the first day I remember like walking along the path and there was this like perfect little bouquet of flowers on the path, you know, and I thought, you know, I could just sort of like, I'm sure some hiker just dropped this. Right. But I like scooped it up and I just said, thanks, Kate, you know, and I like put it in my pocket and then I kept walking and I got out to this cliffside and I really wanted to just scream and cry and kind of rage and I just felt her presence and I heard her say, "Dance, Erin, dance," you know? And I was like, "I don't want to dance. Like, I want to cry and scream." And so I did, I danced and I cried and I did what I needed to do, you know? And I, and then I kind of like, was like, "Katie, like, what, yeah, what's going on? What's happening here?" And she, it became sort of this dialogue of just like, I was pouring out my heart about the things that I felt like I didn't do well for her. Just, you know, all those kind of pieces of grief, the guilt and the, the grief. And I, I hiked up to Mount Tamalpais the next day, kind of in this dialogue the whole way, kind of feeling a lot of like, of at that moment, guilt just for not being able to save her, you know? And I got up to the top of the mountain and there was this, I kind of went out to where there aren't many people. And there was one of those little geocaches. Have you ever seen those that have like things in them?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I found one of these little geocaches and right at the top was this like sticker and it looked like two sisters, a big sister and a little sister. And they were like standing in front of these, like, it looked like the gates of heaven. It's just like what came up in me. It was like these billowing clouds. And it with geocaches, you can like take what you see and leave something. So I took it and I was like really crying by this point. And I was like, and I heard Katie just fill me and say, like, "Erin, like, you have been the best big sister." You know, she was like, "You can let me, like, I'm so good. I am really good." I just kept hearing that, you know? And I thought, what like is happening? And as you do, I said, "Okay, Kate, well just like give me, if this is you, if this, right? If like we're in relationship now, just in a really different way that I don't get, but that like you're obviously kind of present, let me know. Like, just give me that one final sign, you know? And then I'll kind of, I get it." And I was like hiking back down the mountain and I literally almost hit my head on a branch and I kind of like ducked out of the way and I went back and I looked at the branch and it said Caitlin carved into the branch, like exactly the way my sister Caitlin spells her name. And then I just kind of started laughing and like heard her laughing. And I was like, okay, this is not what we think. You know, there is like an inner penetration of the veils here. There's a way that like those we love, you know, are here and we can access them in an ongoing way, which like, duh, like Jesus said, you know, I'll be with you to the end of the age. And we believe that like those who die are part of that love and are part of that presence. And yet there is something right about that trust that they are here for us in a really tangible way. So, you know, that's just kind of one example.
Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah. It was like the most immediate and yeah.
Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
Do you think that's what Jesus' disciples meant when they talked about resurrection?
I mean, I think what they meant, that's a great question. You know, I think he was trying to get them to understand that like that the love that they experienced, the like real life that they experienced with him doesn't go away, you know, and that they were capable of like living it and living into it and that they had access to that all the time, that holding, you know, that they knew in life with him, that they had access to that holding in an ongoing way. And that we all participate in it, you know, on earth as it is in heaven. Yeah. Yeah, I think, you know, it's sort of this, we really have been taught that death is the end in a lot of ways. And yet there is so much love and life beyond death. You know, I mean, for me, that time really, I see that it was the beginning, you know, of this priestess work in a lot of ways, because it taught me about those portal places and it taught me about threshold places and you know, for me, when I, the more I sort of look at the role of priestess through time, you know, it's really to stand in these portals to kind of remind people to be in these thresholds and remind people of the things that we forget, or to name the sacred that is in our midst. You know, I mean, it's like Katie, that sort of, she really gave me an experience of that, of all, everyone of that, to like see and to name and to touch and to even like bridge what we think we know to what is really happening, or between the mundane and the sacred, the ordinary. Yeah, and the sacred.
So let's shift to the beginning of life, because you have experience witnessing birth.
Yeah.
What has preparing women and being present at birth taught you?
Yeah. Well, it certainly taught me the amazing capacity and power of women. You know, I mean, like, amazing, like women's power in the world is so great, you know. And actually, like, the first experience I really had of a woman giving birth, you know, I was like, I get how patriarchy started, because like somebody watched their woman do this and thought, oh my goddess, like, this is a force that could change everything. And it does change everything. I mean, it literally brings life into the world, you know. And yeah, so for me, walking with women in birth, preparing women for birth, it's just really shown me like the amazing power and capacity of women, and also how that has really been like birth. There's so much around birth that women are taught to be afraid of, you know, and I think that's true across the board with women in women's lives. Like, there's a lot we're taught to be afraid of, like in our own body, in our own power, in our own spiritual gifts, in our own dreaming, in our own loving, our own erotic nature. You know, there's so much within us that is so powerful and so sacred. And we're actually taught that it's wrong, or that we're to be afraid of it, you know? And so for me, like, birth is a really palpable way of accompanying women and being with women and, empowering them, just really like, I mean, the role of a doula is really amazing, because you literally just get to like be there and like be their cheerleader, you know, and really like reassure them through all the intensity and all the pain, right? And it's really a great honor and privilege to, because you're also not, you know, you're not diminishing the pain. You're not acting like it's not as intense as it is, because it's super, super intense. And you really look them in the eye and tell them they can do it, because they can.
Yeah.
Right. And so, it involves the entire their whole resource. Like, you just see women, like, when they go into that place of like, of birthing and of what is happening within them, you know, there's a wildness, there's like a, almost like a prime, like an animal instinct, like, can really take over, that knows exactly what to do. And that, but you know, that kind of requires this like surrender and this trust of the movements of the body of that, you know. And it's both like the uterus, you know, the contractions, the uterus knowing just what to do, babies kind of working with mom too. It's this amazing process. And yeah, for me, like, metaphor for God and what she's doing all the time.
Yeah.
Into the world. Yeah. And there is this real willingness to like go into vulnerability that is part of it. Well, and it, you know, it's like, it also has taught me a lot about the cycles of women, right? Because I also work with women who are trying to conceive, or women who don't want to have children and want to honor their blood time and their moon time. And, you know, it's like, that's, yeah, it's like when we live in these cycles of, you know, the ancient goddess used to be referred to as the maiden, the mother, the crone, you know, and I would add queen into that too. But like, you know, that there's these years of young womanhood, there are these years of motherhood, you know, if that's kind of what a woman chooses, there's years of these of queenship, of really standing in that sovereignty and creativity and power. And then there's the croning years, the elder years of like containing the energy and really being of so much service and wisdom and guidance to the world. And it's really amazing, all of those cycles and ways of being in the world. And again, like so much there about who God is and the way that we kind of live and move and have our being in her and the cycles of life. And I'm so curious about what it would mean to really honor those times and to honor our bodies, and also just trying to practice that as much as I can myself, you know.
Mm-hmm. Let's end talking about Mary, mm-hmm. Mother of Jesus, because I know she's important to your spirituality. Mm-hmm. Can you paint us a picture of how Mary fits on your spiritual radar screen?
Yeah. So I feel like evolution has been kind of a word I keep saying, but that has evolved a lot, you know, because I mean, I grew up with a pretty big devotion to Mary. My mom really loved Mary. We crowned her every May and we prayed the rosary every single night in May. And yeah. So just grew up with, you know, a real deep devotion to her and kind of, yeah, in some ways that made sense, in some ways that didn't. You know, I like prayed the rosary sometimes just to be able to fall asleep, which I know is not uncommon, but and then in my kind of young adult years, I just found it really for me was similar to like praying with mala beads, you know, that a lot of yogis do, or it had a quality of like repetitive, mindful, meditative prayer that I really loved. And also just really brought me into the mysteries of the rosary, which is really Mary's whole life. So that devotion to her increased in a different way, in kind of a particular way that felt more deeply in relationship with my own life. Today, yeah, I feel like I consider her the first priestess because she was the first one to embody the first Christian priestess. You know, there are priestesses, you know, long before. There's some really good work being done around Jewish priestessing. So I consider her, but as far as Christian priestessing goes, like she said, this is my body, this is my blood, like with her body and brought Jesus into the world. So I really honor her as priestess. I honor her as queen, you know, mother, divine mother. I really see in her, there's a big reclamation around her that I really hold and carry, which is more about her sovereignty, more about her power, more about how, you know, the Mary of the Magnificat in a lot of ways, you know, because we've been just sold this version of her passivity and her complicity that is really convenient for the patriarchy. And yet, you know, she's so much more than that. And or she's just not that. She's just this incredibly sovereign, powerful priestess, teacher. You know, there's some really great work being done about the early Christian communities and just how Mary showed up in those communities and was really one of the women that was turned to really regularly by the early Christian communities to figure out what to do and how do we practice this meal and and she was really showing up as teacher and as leader. So I very much see her as a model of women's sacramental and spiritual leadership. And she, for me, she's very personal with her love. You know, she's very present and she's very personal and she's very, protective is kind of the word that's coming to mind. Like she's a tremendous resource. She's kind of a prominent part of my, what I consider like my spirit team, you know? And I just think she's made herself known to be extremely available for everyone and anyone who really wants to draw on her as resource.
Yeah.
And as partner, you know, I think she's really empowering us. She's sort of part of that big love that I was kind of talking about with Katie that we have access to and that we, that is resourcing us all the time.
Mm-hmm. And you lead a rosary group regularly these days. Can you tell the listeners more about that group?
Sure. Yeah. I lead a rosary group twice a week now, Sunday evenings and Thursday mornings, mostly just, it's really sweet. It's a way to pray the rosary together, but we weave in a lot of our own personal prayers. We really kind of talk about the mysteries of the rosary in ways that are relevant to our life, just with this understanding that Mary is, she wants to know the desires of our heart, that she's very much part of our lives in a really real way. So we pray together. It's usually about an hour when we just pick kind of a set of mysteries to pray each time. That's every Sunday and every Thursday.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
I'll put information in this episode's show notes for anyone who might ever want to join you all, because it's on Zoom, right?
It is on Zoom right now, and we're probably going to do another one in person if anybody's listening who happens to be in St. Louis. And that will probably be at our, so Sophia Rising just opened a physical space. So we're going to start doing public ritual and gatherings, here in St. Louis. So,
oh my gosh, tell us more about that.
So I was mentioning Sophia Rising, which is the, Christian priestess collective here in St. Louis. It's kind of emerging collective of women really working. We're really gathering. We've been gathering for years about just to pray together, to explore together. And we are beginning to offer more public ritual. We have a fall equinox celebration coming up. And just we'll be offering both, seasonal celebrations and celebrations of the liturgical year. We hope to start offering a Mother Mass soon, just Mass in the Divine Feminine. Yeah.
So cool.
Yeah. So just a lot of, emerging pieces there too.
Where can people find out more about Sophia Rising?
So we haven't quite launched our website, but when we do, it'll be sophiarising.com. You can also get in touch with me at aaronduffyburke.com or aaronduffyburke@gmail.com is my email address. Any of those ways, I'm happy to connect or really just, have more conversation. I think part of the work that we're doing together as a Christian Priestess Collective is just really listening to other women who are feeling this call, who know that they're here to be of service, that have experienced a call to sacramental and spiritual leadership, that are really kind of looking perhaps to do that in a different way, kind of fully embodying their womanhood, femininity. I want to say too that when I say that I guess I don't mean so much like women only, but there is this kind of emphasis on the female principle in kind of an effort to like balance what has for so long been the dominant male principle, that we're really exploring a new way. We consider ourselves very much to be in the lineage of Mother Mary and of Mary Magdalene, more so than Peter, or Paul.
Fantastic. Erin, thank you so much for sharing your wisdom and your stories with us today.
Thank you, Molly. Thanks for having me.
Okay, now, it's worth mentioning, I've been to Erin's rosary group, and this is not your grandmother's rosary group. Look forward to inclusive language for the divine, lots of talk about the Holy Spirit, Sophia, and the Sovereign Mother, Mary. The group works with the book Way of the Rose, The Radical Path of the Divine Feminine Hidden in the Rosary. Definitely try to check it out and hit up Erin on her blog at aaronduffyburke.com to find out more. Thanks for listening to On a Mission. Find all of the details about this episode, including links to Erin's blog and her post Katie Sightings at MaulineDupreeDominguez.com. While you're there, make sure you sign up for my weekly email newsletter, which contains prayer tools, cool stuff to read, and links to other progressive, faith-based stuff around the internet. Try and review this podcast wherever you listen so more people can find us. If you enjoyed the podcast today, contribute on buymeacoffee.com/Maulene. See you next time.